Okay, we're going to start at the top of Kuf Chavav Amud Aleph. We just finished off with the Psak. And now we're going to speak about Bechor and what the rights or needs of a Bechor to act are. So Amar Avuna Amar Vasi, Bechor Shemicha Micha. If a Bechor objects, then his objection stands. Amar Rabbo, Mistaber time of the Rabasi. Reb Asi makes sense, ba'navim u'batzrum. We're talking about grapes, and then he picked them. Zeitim u'maskum, more olives than he harvested them. Avodar chum, no. But on the other hand, if he pressed them, he stomped them, then that's not the case. Rav Yosef Amar, afilu darchum. Even if he presses them. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. Darchum mikari invi hashtachamro. When it's talking about pressing grapes, in the beginning they are grapes, and now they are wine. This is a significant change in the item. How can you call it the same item? So, this is the given the damages for the grapes. So what's happening here? We've discussed until this point that a b'chor is not entitled to the shevach in the property. We just had the psak of Rav Papa, that he's not entitled to the shevach in the property. So what are his rights in terms of objecting to the other parties investing in the property or improving the property? So that's what Rav Asi says. Rav Asi says that the Bechor stands up and says, listen, I want to split now. I want to split now because I want to keep my portion and I want my portion to accrue or appreciate to my benefit. But I don't, so they don't listen and they go ahead and they improve the property. What do? They go and pick grapes. They go and harvest the olives. So here's an improvement. A grape on the vine or an olive on the tree versus in the basket. The basket's worth a lot more than it is on the tree because the work has been done. So Nebuchor says, listen, I said already that I wanted to split. So Vasa says he's right. Once he's objected and said he wanted to split, then he does keep the Shevach because you've ignored his request to split the estate. And by ignoring his request to split the estate, he's basically taking delivery of his extra portion. And by taking delivery of his extra portion, any appreciation or any benefit is going to be to him. So then along comes Rabbo and says, wait, depends what type of improvement was done over here. And the way the Rishbam states it, the Rishbam basically compares it to gzeila, to stealing. The other brothers are now considered as if, quote unquote, they are stealing. They're not stealing, but the fact is that he's made a request to split the estate, and they have ignored that request. By ignoring that request, they're ignoring what he wants or his rights in the property. By doing that, they become like gazlani. And when we talk about gazlanim, we know that there is a principle of shinui. Until, if the item is the same item that it was before, then we say, hand it back. Harishol chalif anecha. Whereas if the item is changed, ishtane, then you can't say Harishol Chfanecha because you were koneh, you acquired it with the shinui. The ganav, the gazlan, acquired it with the shinui. So based on that, that's Rabba's explanation. He says, true, if the Bechor objects to what the other brothers are doing and they go ahead and do it anyway, if we're talking about grapes that were on the vine and now they're in the bucket or in the basket, and you do the same thing with olives on the tree and now on, right, in the matan or they're in the olive hold. So if that's the case, nothing's changed. It's the same olives, it's the same grapes, they're called olives. So then true, all that benefit went to the Bechor because he could just say, hand it to me, my object back. And then if they're pressed and turned to wine, they've done something so significant that it's no longer a grape. It's no longer the item that he objected about. If he didn't object again, or even if he does object again, it's not going to make a difference because there was a shinui. The shinui, they're kone it. What does it mean they're kone it? At the point they do the shinui, they become responsible for the grapes. If they become responsible for the grapes, then they have to pay him the value of a grape right before it's pressed. They have to replace the grapes right before it's pressed, and they'll keep the wine because they've already moved beyond the point where he can keep what they're doing because there's a shinui, there's a change here. So that's the position of Rabba. Rav Yosef comes along and says, no, even if they press the grapes, even if they stomp on the grapes, he can still get it. Mar says, how could you ever do such a thing? Rav Yosef makes no sense. It was a grape, now it's wine. How could Rav Yosef claim that the Bechor still has rights in these grapes? So Gemara's answer is, like Rav Uchum, Ukma bar Chama, Yitain Dmei Hezek Anavav. To give the damage for Anavav. The way the Rashbam learns it over here is that he actually they take on the responsibility of the upside and the downside. I mean, if there is a diminishment in the value, then they will have to compensate for that diminishment in value. So in the end, it comes out, according to this explanation, that Rabba and Rav Yosef do not argue. They're just addressing different cases or issues. That's what, as the Rashbam formulates here, Mar Mar Chada, or Mar Mar Chada below Pligay. Each one states a statement, but they're not arguing. Rabba Iri De'ein Notel B'Sheva Chayayim. Rabba is basically addressing the fact that if they reach the point where it's wine, the Bechor does not get that benefit in the wine, because it's already past the point where he owns it. At the time of the Shinoi, the ownership reverted to the other brothers, or to the estate, and they're going to have to compensate him at that level. Rabba comes along to tell us, Rav Yosef, I mean, comes along to tell us, Atle Meimar, Da'achanam Yidol Shakeo, B'pchitat Ayayin Midmei Avanavim. If it went down a value, say the wine turned to vinegar, or something negative happened over here, that will be the estate's problem as well. He gets the compensation at the moment of the Shinoi, at the time that they make the decision to ignore him, and go on with the pressing process. So that's the statement. The Rashbam does bring down that there were other explanations, one of which was that the Bechor has to object multiple times. Every time, the first time he can object, that only helps him as long as the items are the same items. If they're going to change it, he's going to have to make another objection. Although the Rashbam, he himself says that he doesn't think that's the right explanation. The other is the Rabbeinu Gershom over here mentions what's the Mei Chezek and Avav, the damage done to the grapes. The Rabbeinu Gershom claims that is that when you press the grapes, many of them are lost or wasted. And they spread out. They have to pay him that damage, meaning that the way they press the grapes, right, might affect the grapes themselves, and therefore he has to pay for the damage to the grapes. Although, it doesn't make so much sense, because the whole idea of pressing grapes is that the wine or the end product will be worth more. So unless the Rabbeinu Gershom is suggesting that here the wine was not worth more, then they have to pay him for the damage to the grapes, which turns out to be the same thing as the Rashbam in the end. So now,
I don't understand something. Why does he even get the carrot?
Rabbi is saying he has no participation in the upside, and Rabbi Yosef is saying he has no participation in the downside either. He's protected on both directions.
Okay.
I mean, that if someone steals wood, and then he makes them into beams, or he makes it into a piece of furniture. So it's not that he's responsible for the wood. He has to repay for the wood that he stole. But he's not, he does, the person who he stole from does not get the furniture back. He doesn't get these beams back where he's made this improvement. Because the moment he made the shinoi, he was konev, and you pay him at that moment what the wood was worth at that moment. So same thing here. He's going to pay him for the grapes at the moment before they were changed into wine, because those are the grapes that was the moment before, that's what they were konev.
When Yosef says, I feel a drachm, it doesn't mean I feel a drachm, he gets
the wine, shevach.
He's protected on the downside.
Right, exactly. Get through it quickly. Amar Rabba, Mistavar Tamid Rabasi. Rabasi makes sense, but Navim Vatrum, Zeitim Maskum. They're about objects that have not changed their form, then the original owner, meaning the Bechor here, still owns them, and therefore he'll get any of the upside in those items, because they're his items, because he has to have the estate divided. About Darchum, if there's a significant change here, then he won't get the upside, because that'll cut off his connection to the property because of the shinoi, and he'll get the value of it right before the shinoi was done. They'll have to compensate him for that. But any upside or the wine that he created, he's not going to get that upside. As Rav Yosef Amar, Filu Darchum. Yosef says, even if they press them, but come on, guys, what do you mean if he press them? Darchum Ikara Inve Ashtachamra, there's too significant a change. How could the Bechor really still be entitled to any Shevach here? It says, no, it's not talking about Shevach here. It's because Amar Abuk Barcham, Litin Lodmei Ezekanavav, to pay for the damage or the downside. Hachanayim Litin Lodmei Ezekanavav, that Rabbi Yosef is addressing downside. That the Bechor is protected from the downside from the moment they start pressing, because that Shinoi not only disowns him from the property so he doesn't get the upside, also disowns him from the property that he doesn't get the downside. So if something goes wrong, he won't be responsible for that. The estate will have to bear that responsibility, and they'll have to compensate him for grapes right before the pressing, which whatever that value was, they're going to have to give him back, and not the post, which is a pressing value, which is lower than that of the grapes before they press.
Rabbi would disagree with that?
No, that's what the Rashbam said in the end. Right? They're addressing different issues, but they both agree that they're all disagreeing. So the Gemara says, okay, Heicha Itmar de Ravuka Bar Chama. What is Ravuka Bar Chama addressing? Aha, Dama Rav Yudah Mishmo, it's on this statement of Rav Yudah Mishmo, Bechor Upashut, Sheniach Lehem Aviyem. So a Bechor, you have two brothers that collected an estate. There's a Bechor and the other brother. Anavim Upatsrum Zaitim Maskum, there were grapes that were then harvested, or olives that were picked. Bechor Notel Pishnaim, Bechor gets a double portion. Afidu Darchum, even if they are oppressed, he gets the double portion of that. It says, Darchum Mikara Inve Ashlach Amro. What are you talking about? If they're pressed, we're talking about a totally different item. There's a shinoi over here. I mean, obviously, the work being done here is by the brother, the Pashut brother over here, is doing it without the knowledge of the Bechor, or with the knowledge of the Bechor, and he's objected to him doing such. So, Amar Mar, Ukvar Bar Chama, Etenlo Dmei Chazek Anavav. That's the statement. That's where the original statement of Mar Ukvar Bar Chama was, which is over here. Again, he's protected from the downside. If his other brother takes the initiative, does something without the permission of the Bechor, or again, the Bechor objected and said, I want to split the estate, and he goes ahead and does it anyway. In that case, he's protected from the moment he does the change. There's a shinui in it. He becomes responsible to pay the Bechor for that money, and then any upside or downside will be his, of the estate, or the Pashut, the brother, single brother. First, the Bechor who collects on a portion of the property like a regular brother. They're dividing up the property and he takes a portion like a regular brother. Viter, he's given up his rights. He has been now denied his rights as a Bechor because he did not object at that moment. So Gemara says, my Viter. So Amar Papa Mishmei Derava Amar Viter Boto Sodeh. That's only in this division of the property. There are going to be multiple divisions of the estate. This property, other properties, the Metaltalim. So when he allows himself to be distributed like a regular brother in this field, that's fine. For this field, he's given up his rights as a Bechor. Whereas in any other division of the estate, he can still exercise his rights as a Bechor. Rabbi Mishmei Derava Amar Biter Bechor Nechasim Kulan. As soon as he accepts for a portion of the property, he accepts to be given or distributed like a regular brother, that means he's given up his rights as a Bechor to the entire estate. And he can no longer exercise his right as a Bechor. Rav Papa Mishmei Derava Amar Viter Boto Sadek. Right, so Rav Papa, what's the reasoning between Rav Papa and the name of Rav? Viter Boto Sadek, Hasavar, Ein Lo the Bechor Kodem Chalukah. His understanding is that the Bechor has no rights before the division. If he has no rights before the division, that means that he can't, what you can't do is deny a right before you have that right. Right, you can only deny a right that has actually been granted to you. So until this point in time, the Bechor had nothing. So now they go to divide the estate. Now he has a right as a Bechor in this field that they are now dividing. So when he said, just takes it as a regular brother, he's now said, okay, I'm willing to forego that right as the Bechor. But he can only forego the right that he actually has, and that's to the Sadeh. But the rest of the estate hasn't been distributed yet. It's not distributed, he hasn't seen that right yet. And he can't forego a right that he hasn't seen yet. Rapapi. Mishmei the Rabba Amar, on the other hand, Rabba says, Viter Bechor Nechasim Kulan. The reason that he now has forgone his rights with regards to the entire estate is because Yeshlo the Bechor Kodem Chalukah, that the Bechor has, from the moment his father passes away, the Bechor is entitled to exercise his right as a Bechor. And since he has that right already, once he has forgone the right with one field, that means he's forgone the right for the entirety of the estate. Since he forgave or forwent his rights here in this field, it means that he's giving up on all the fields or all the estate. This disagreement or difference between Rapapi and Rapapa was not explicitly said. We know it from a case. We had this case with the Bechor, the Azel, Zavin Nichse Didei Ude Pashut. Two possibilities. What we're talking about here when you're talking about Bechor and a Pashut. Possibilities that he sold his property, both the Chelek HaBechor of his and the Pashut, meaning that a Bechor is entitled to two sections of the estate. One is the normal division as a brother, and then number two is his extra section as a Bechor. So that's what could be the meaning over here. We're talking about a Bechor and a Pashut. Or we could talk about Bechor and Pashut means he, the Bechor, plus the Pashut, his brother, the Pashut. And that's probably the Rosh Hashanah says that's the explanation here, and he says that he thinks that's the right way to read this Gemara. So now, he went ahead and sold the property here without the knowledge of his brother, or again against the will of his brother, and went ahead and sold it out after. So now, Azal Yatmei Bnei Pashut, the Meichel Tamre. So the children of the Pashut passes away before the estate is ever divided up, after the sale of the Bechor of the entire estate. Not that here, again, not here that he's trying to steal the estate. He's trying to monetize the estate, and then he's going to divide it up. He'll take a double portion, he'll give a single portion to Pashut. He just doesn't have approval of his brothers to do such, or the other brother to do this. So the children, or the orphans of this other brother, who has passed away, they come along and they go to eat from the dates on the tree that was in the part that belonged to their father. From those buyers that took the property from their father, meaning through the Bechor who sold it to them, they took the property of their father. Bechonu, they hit them. They hit them with sticks, they chased them away. Amrei lehu krovim, the relatives of the Yitomim, of these orphans, said to these lekuchot, to these buyers, lo mistayei dezvanitu lenichsahu, not enough that you bought their property against their will. Ella mimchanami mechut mechitalu. You're also hitting them now and driving them off the property. You're doing two wrongs now. First of all, you bought the property from their older brother, from the older brother, I mean their uncle, the Bechor, without permission of their father. And now, not only that, when they come to eat from the property, you're hitting them. So after they came to Rava, they came before Rava the din. Amar lehu lo asav lo klum. He did nothing. The Bechor did absolutely nothing. In his sale of the property, he's done nothing. So Gemara wants to know, what does that mean? He hasn't done anything. One of them holds that he didn't do anything in half the sale. And one of them holds that he did nothing with the entire sale. So what does it mean that in the half the sale he's done nothing? According to the Rishbam, it means that he's done nothing when it comes to the chelek pashtut, or the chelek pashut of the Bechor. He's done absolutely nothing. What does that mean, he's done absolutely nothing? It means that he's not allowed to sell the estate. He didn't have a right to sell the estate. What did he have a right to sell? He had a right to sell his chelek Bechorah. Why? Because in terms of the Bechorah, he's already received that right, he's already received that property. The chelek pashut belongs to the entire estate, and he has to wait for the division to get that. But the Chelek HaBechor, as soon as his father dies, is granted to him, and he can do whatever he wants with the Chelek HaBechor. So now this Mar Savar, who's the Mar over here? Right, the Mar over here is Rav Puppy. Right, so Rav Puppy is going to say, in this case, what the Bechor went and sold all the estate without permission, as far as the Chelek HaBechorah, the sale went through. But his, even the Bechor is Chelek HaPashut, and the other brother is Chelek HaPashut, it's null and void, because he didn't have rights to sell it yet. Until the state's divided, he doesn't get access to that property. Whereas with his Chelek HaBechorah, he automatically gets access because, right away, he's entitled to the property. So now, on the other hand, Mar Savar, this is Rav Papa, says he didn't do anything. Why did he do nothing? Because he has no rights. He has no rights in the Chelek HaPashut, and he has no rights in the Bechorah. As we said before in the Rav Papa, until you come to divide the property, there is no, Bechor cannot have any rights. Until he's actually granted, or able to be granted the property, he has no rights over here. So what's their machlokas about? So their machlokas about how we view the granting of the right to the brothers. When we grant the, or to the Bechor, do we view it as latet? It has to be a matana. And since it's a matana, latet lo, it's a gift that's granted to him, then that grant is given to him as soon as the father passes away. And therefore his right exists already to collect on that matana. Or do we say no? That the Chelek HaBechorah has to be similar to the Chelek HaPashut. But similar to the Chelek HaPashut, it does not reach him until the point where there's a division. So too, the Chelek HaBechorah does not reach him until they come to divide the property. Shachumitam, the Gemara says, they send from Eretz Yisrael, Bechor Shemachar Kodim Chaluka, Bechor that is, sells his property before the division, Lo Asaklum. He did nothing like the position of Rav Papa. Alma, ain't lo the bechor called him chaluka. So that's the position of the Bnei Marava, Bnei Eretz Yisrael. It's clearly that bechor has no rights until the division comes. Vehilchasa, the loch is, yesh the bechor called him chaluka. That's not true. That bechor has a right to his chelik ha-bechora immediately. Marzutra midreishpa, Palag Betzina de Pilpile, Marzutra from the Rishpa, he was a Bechor, and he divided up a basket of peppers with his brothers, Bahadi Achin B'Shaveh, equally. So he did not take an additional Chalaka Bechora, he simply divided equally with the rest of his brothers, and it's just a basket of peppers that he did with them. Ata the Kamed Ravashi, he came before Ravashi, Amalei Hove Vitarta B'Miktat, Vitarta B'Chon Chasim Kulam. If we're going to say the halacha is that a bechor has rights before the division, that means if you were mochel, if you forewent your right as a bechor prior at this moment when you divided the peppers, that means that you've forgiven your rights in the entire estate because you had rights to exercise. You did not exercise them. By not exercising them, you've lost all your rights. So because he was a nice guy and divided the peppers evenly, he's lost his right as a bechor to the entire estate based on this psak. Okay, now, there are two quick things to point out over here. One of them is the Tap Tosfot, which explains, it says, Peretz HaKuntres explains the Rashbam's explanation, what palga, half, means. He says that, Ela Nira, if you look, it's the third line down at Tosfot, Nira, Delo Asav Elo Klum Bepalga Ainu Bechelek Pshitut De'achin, Avachal Bechora Machar, Vachoshkein Chelek Pshituto. He disagrees with the Rashbam. The Rashbam said that when he said palga, Paga Rapapi, when he said Paga, he means that he's successful at selling his Chelek HaBechorah. But he's unsuccessful at selling his Chelek HaPshitut and the Chelek HaPshitut of the brothers. Tosafot says he doesn't say things that it doesn't make sense. He says that he could sell whatever he would have owned. He could sell his Chelek HaBechorah and he could sell his Chelek HaPshitut. The only thing that we take away from him is the Chelek HaPshitut of the Achin. Because that's the only thing he did not have a right to or a right to sell. As far as his property is concerned, why can't he sell his chelik ha-pshitut shelo? I mean, he has rights to it, and eventually it's going to be his, and he should be able to sell it. So that's the only little nuance that he has. What? A palga is because he sold his rights and his brother's rights. Right, but over here, I mean, palga means that he dealt with two people, his rights and his brother's rights. So that which he sold of his rights is valid, and what she sold from his brother's rights are invalid. That's palga. That means not to split it, but palga half, meaning that half of it goes through, that which was related to him, the other half doesn't go through, which is not related to him.
Rashba would say probably that if it hasn't gotten to him, he doesn't know what.
Right, he doesn't know which chelik is his chelik. He doesn't have taken possession of it yet, right? Right. So Tosfos quotes a Gemara that we said before. It becomes yours. Even though you haven't taken it, we assume that you have certain rights in it.
Okay, but to sell something, to give someone else rights in something that...
Right, do you have enough power? The question is, do you have enough power in there to do that? Right. I assume that's be the Machlokes here, Tosfos and the Rashbam. Right. Right, you don't have enough rights to sell. That's basically what the Rashbam is indicating. That your rights in this are no better than your brother's rights, and therefore you can't sell anything until it's divided to you. Right now, the next thing is we have to reconcile by doing a number of items, which is, number one, we just said that the Bechor has enough rights to forego his rights or to forgive his rights as a Bechor. But we said also yesterday's daf that the Bechor is not muzak in the property. He's not muzak enough in the property that if he passes away, right, that he gets the Shevach or an increase in value. Plus, we said before that a Bechor can deny his rights to get the property before it reaches him. So now how do we reconcile all these different Gemaras? That's what this Tosfos does over here. It says, Afogav, the Kaim Alon Kerabonon, even though we pass like the Rabbonon, Kedepasuk Rapapa, the En Nocher Bechor Notel Pishnaim Bemilve Kerabonon, the Amri Chelek Bechorah Ada Ateliade. The reason is, he's not Mukzak in the Milve until it reaches the estate. The estate, it's considered ra'oi, because the milveh is something that will come in the future. Nevertheless, modu rabbanan de yesh lebechor kodem chaluka. Nevertheless, the rabbanan still agree that over here, the bechor has rights before the division. The peres ha'kuntish, davi shaper ra'oi leteitlo. It's something that is ra'oi leteitlo. It's something that he could be given now. The mishash made to av, haya ra'oi leteitlo. The time the father dies, it's something that a right that could be granted to him. Umiu, mikomakom, eno tel pishnaim b'shevach, We don't exclude that from the gift. That we have to say it has to be found. He has to actually have possession of it. He has to be in possession of it. To exclude things that are not there yet, which are milveh and shevach, that are coming in the future. V'imamar,
the state has to have possession of it.
Right. Any notel, any notain. And if he denies that right early on, rashai, he's permitted. The reason behind this is not because of whether he has rights or not before the division. Because he has a right to deny it before he gets there. That means that until it reaches his hands, he can deny that right, and nobody can come to him and make a claim against him. So he has a right to disavow that right, but that won't be a permanent. He can later on take it or exercise the right. What comes out is that you have three halachot here. One halacha is that a bechor is not muvzak in property. Anything that comes out of the state is not muvzak in that property. Even his chelik habechora is not muvzak in it. And that's why he doesn't get a piece of the milveh, or chelik bechor in the milveh, or the shevach, because he's not muvzak in the davar. But that's from the word imatzelo. That doesn't mean he doesn't have a right as a bechor. His rights as a bechor are ready to be exercised. He just has to exercise them. Instead, let's divide the property. Let's divide the estate. If he has that right, and that right exists, since that right exists, then we have halacha over here, if he's viter, if he goes ahead and doesn't take like a chelik bechor in any one of the divisions, then he's viter on the entire thing. He's giving up his rights to everything because the rights exist. Even though he's not mukzak b'davar, the rights exist. There's another halacha. The other halacha is that a bechor can say any notel v'any notain, right? I'm not going to take my chelik bechorah and I will not give double portion. I won't take a double portion, I won't give a double portion. Again, that has nothing to do with his rights yet or whether he's received his rights. It's basically something where he's saying, I'm not ready to accept my rights. If he says, I'm not ready to accept my rights, that means that anybody who has a claim against him can't come after him. Later on, he can say, listen, I want to exercise my rights now. But when he says that, he's not being viter. It means that he hasn't given up his rights. The only time he's given up his rights is when there's a division, and he acts like a pashut and not a bechor. That's a foregoing his rights. But beforehand, he's just saying, I'm not ready to accept my rights. I can later accept my rights. If he does that, that's fine. Because he's not then permanently disengaged from being a bechor. He's just saying, right now, I'm not ready to accept my rights. But later on, I will accept my rights. Those are the three halachot that came out from all the gemaras that we've been learning until now. And the Tosafot is just misader them. A new Mishnah. Omer ish ploni b'ni b'chor lo yitol b'shnayim. Person says, my oldest son, the b'chor, should not get a double portion. Ish ploni b'ni lo yiresh shemechav. This child of mine, my son, should not inherit with the rest of his brothers. Lo amar klum. He said nothing. He's making a tanai and what's written in the Yerusha of the Torah, and therefore he doesn't have a right to do that. Hamechalek. And again, he can't. Person can't remove somebody from the Yerusha unless he gives it b'lashon matana, unless he gives it as a gift. Because here the problem is that he's giving it as Yerusha and he's trying to make it Yerusha in a certain way which goes against the Torah. That he can't do. And, or according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broku, we saw before, you're allowed to redistribute your estate to other parties who are rightful inheritors and you can give it to them and deny someone else the inheritance. That's only if you say to the others, brothers. Not that when you deny this brother inheritance, but you say to the other brothers, you will inherit my estate. That works according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. What you can't say is, you are not going to inherit my estate, even according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. So even according to those that say, you can't rejigger your estate, the problem here is he's saying it derech Yusha and not derech Matana. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, it says you are allowed to redistribute Yerusha as long as it's done to people who are valid Yerushim, then you have to say it in the positive form. You have to say you will get the property, not that you will not get the property. Right, so now, this doesn't work because he's mad namash kodu b'torah. Mechalek nechasav alpiv, person is on his deathbed and is dividing up his property. Over there he's granting it as a gift. If he's granting it as a gift, if he gives one more than the other, or he denies the b'chor as chalek b'chorah, it works. Because he's giving a gift before his death. If he's gifting before his death, we're not talking about Yerusha, we're talking about a matana. When you give a gift, you can give anyone a gift any way you want. As soon as he enters the word that says that this is because of the inheritance, then he ruins everything he said. If anywhere along the way in the document it says that it's a gift, that overrides any mention of Yerusha, and it will work. And it will be, the words or whatever division he's done will be upheld. So Gemara says, Lema matitan to look Rabbi Yehuda. Let's say our mission is not like Rabbi Yehuda. Dear Rabbi Yehuda, Amar b'davar shel mamon t'no kayam. You know from the Gemara in Kiddushin that Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that you're allowed to make a t'nai in the Torah when it comes to monetary matters. When it comes to Yisurim, there you can't make a t'nai. But when it comes to monetary matters, you can. Detan, you have a brisa. Omer li shari at mukdeshet li amanachin lech lech laich alai shar kshir ksut vona arizim mukdeshet v'tno batel. Devi Rabbi Meir. Person is Kiddushim. Right, offers Kiddushim to a woman, but it says on the condition that I will not be chayav in your shir ksut vilna, right? I will not be chayav in your mezonot, in your clothing, and in your onah, then it doesn't work. The tanai doesn't work, and therefore the Kiddushin go through without the tanai. So we've discussed this in the past, because even though there wasn't his intent for the Kiddushin to go through without the tanai, it doesn't matter. Because the fact is that the Torah is the chiddush, that's what Tosa says. The Torah is mechadish, that a tanai, an oral condition, can undermine a maaseh, an action. So therefore, since it's a chiddush min haTorah, if the tanai falls apart, the action will go through. So do over here. Rabbi Meir's action goes through, just the tanai is invalid. When it comes to monetary matters, his tanai works. Meaning by she'er, by mazon and ksut, it'll work. By onai, it won't work, his tanai. So there you see that Rabbi Yehuda believes that when it comes to monetary matters, you can make a condition against the Torah. So why not over here? Why can't he distribute his estate against the Torah? This is a monetary matter. Where it says, the filut emir Rabbi Yehuda, over there are two parties. And over there, the woman accepts the Kiddushin with the understanding of the conditions. So she is mochel on what she receives, or the way she's taking her Kiddushin. Over here, this is a unilateral decision by the father to disinherit the son. There, he's not mochel on it. He doesn't accept this division. So how can you say, Rabbi Yehuda says true, when there's two parties that come to an agreement, and it's against the Torah in monetary matters, that's fine. But you can't have someone acting unilaterally against the Torah in monetary matters. So Amar of Yosef, says, Amar Ish Ploni Bnei Bechorihu. He says, this individual is my oldest son, Natal Pishnayim. That individual gets the double portion, because he's declared him as the Bechor. Ish Ploni, he talks about his son, Bechor who? Says, this person, meaning he's speaking about his son, but he's saying this person is a bechor. He doesn't get a double portion. Why? We don't know what it means when he says bechor. The word bechor has multiple definitions. You can have a bechor lerechem, which is his mother's firstborn, and you can have a bechor nachla, which is the father's firstborn. So when he says in the possessive form, right, he says bini bechori, he is my oldest son. Then he's in reference to himself. He's saying he's the oldest son. That's a bechor lenachla. Yet when he says in a generic language, this child is a bechor, we don't know what he means when this is a bechor. Does he mean a bechor l'nachla? Or does he mean a bechor l'kohen? We don't know, so therefore he won't get a double portion. Someone came before Rabbi Chana, Amalem, Mukhskani bazeshu bechor. I know for certain that this individual is a bechor. Amalem, and ayadata. How do you know that he's a bechor? Dava kori le abba avua buchra sikhla. His father used to call him, you foolish oldest son. All right, dear Mr. Fool. The oldest, my oldest Mr. Fool. Dilma, come on, see. So, Rabbi Bachana says back to him, Dilma Bukhra Dimahu. How do you know when he says, you are the oldest, that means oldest in Achla, maybe it's the oldest of his mother. To call Bukhra Dimah, Nami Bukhra Desikha Karule. Because that's the general way that they call a Bukhra of the mother is a bukhra desikhla, the foolish bukhra. So that's what over here, now the explanation is, sukhal means foolish, but the explanation over here does not mean foolish, but rather means partial. Sukhla means not complete, just like we use today in generic. People use for items that are unusual, they call them Chinese. So somebody calls something a Chinese potato and a Chinese apple. Even though they're fruits by themselves, they call it something that looks like an object, but they use the term Chinese to describe it. Because it's unusual, meaning it's something from the Far East, something far away, even though that's not where it's sourced from. But it's a term that became used, probably not, it's probably taboo already to use this term, but that was a term that was used to describe items that are unusual. So over here, the word sukhla does not mean fool, and that he's addressing his son as a fool, but rather sukhla was a term that meant that you're not a complete bechor. Bechor L'suchla means you're only a kind of, you're a kind of a b'chor. You're a pseudo b'chor. Why are you a pseudo b'chor? Because you're only a b'chor to the mother, not a b'chor to the father. So Rabbi Chaim says it even makes more sense now. If you heard him say b'chor suchla, that he's probably not a b'chor to Nachla. He's only a partial b'chor. And that partial b'chor means that he's only a b'chor the Kohen. Ha'od atatameh Rabbi Chanina. There's one who, an individual came before Rabbi Chanina. Amalei, m'chuskani b'zeshu b'chor. I'm certain that this individual is a b'chor. Amalei, m'na yadat. How do you know? Amalei, d'chi abo atu l'gabe avua. When he used to go to his father. Amalei, zilu l'gabe shichichat b'ri. Go to shichichat my brother, my son. The b'chorahu, he's my oldest. Shichichat b'ri is the name of the b'chor. Go to him, because he's a b'chor. Umasi roke. And his spit or saliva is good, efficacious in curing. So my says, Dilma b'chadimahu. How do you know which type of b'chor is he? Is he b'chor a kohen? Or is he a b'chor, right, l'nachla? So Gemire, the Gemara says, we know for certain, b'chor da'aba masei roke, b'chadima lo masei roke. We have a mesorah that the saliva of a b'chor from the father has healing qualities, whereas the b'chor to a mother does not necessarily have healing qualities. So what they're talking about over here in the Gemara is the fact that when somebody has an eye ailment, there was a belief that the saliva was efficacious for curing the eye ailment. But what type of saliva is efficacious in curing the eye ailment is only saliva that comes from a b'chor. And the Gemara tells us at the end that's only a b'chor to the father. So therefore, this individual is testifying about this b'chor, says, as listen, I heard his father saying to people who came to him, we want something to help our eyes. He said, go to my son, the b'chor, and get his saliva, because he's a b'chor. So since we know that the only saliva that's efficacious in helping with eye ailments is the saliva that comes from a b'chor for the father, then it's clear that if his father's sending the people to his b'chor, that he's a b'chor l'nachla, he's a b'chor to the father. So in this case, we would believe him. Now the Rishbam points out, in this case, we'd have to have him, it would have to be him plus another aide. I mean, it would be this individual plus another aide over here. When it's the father speaking, the father has a special right as an individual to make a declaration about his son. But here, where we're talking about other individuals making declarations about a b'chor, there you need eidut. And eidut has to become with two people. So this individual plus another aide came along, as Rishbam points out, and they made these declarations about b'chor. In the first case, by Rabbi Barachana, he does not accept it, because he says it seems more likely that this b'chor was a b'chor li'ima, not necessarily a b'chor la'abo. In the second case, where they came before Rabbi Chanina, over there, they do accept his testimony as b'chor, because it was clear from the situation when he called them b'chor, that he was talking about a b'chor the father, because he was talking about the saliva being efficacious. And that's only true of a b'chor the father, and therefore over there we'll accept their testimony that he is a b'chor. Alright, we'll stop over here.